Kluber 15-4, leads the league in ERA at 2.56.
Went right back out there and locked him up. Swung on and missed. He struck him out. Slugs this one high in the air, deep to left. Presley is back, looking up. It is gone. Francisco Lindor puts the Indians on the board first here tonight with a leadoff homer. In the dirt. Allen's off for second. Coming home, Santana is safe. And a wild pitch makes it 2-0 Cleveland. Needing one more out. Slow chopper to third. Urshela will flip the first. It's in the bag, and the Indians have won their 20th consecutive game. They have tied Oakland for the American League record. And Corey Kluber authors the complete game shutout. It's this one high in the air. Deep left. Back is Presley. He's out of room. It is off the top of the wall. Three-run shot for Jay Bruce, and the Indians go on top 3-1.
And the 0-2.
Here's a fastball hit on the center. Deep. Back is Jones. He's looking up. It is gone to Souvenir City. Roberto Perez, home run number 6 on the year. And it gives the Indians a little bit of breathing room, now up 5-3.
We keep saying it, but I think it's more a mindset than anything. Just coming to the field every day and trying to win that game. You know, we haven't gotten caught up in a winning streak or been worrying about that or anything. Honestly, it's just every day is a new day starting over.
Well, and again, I don't look at it like everything's on the line. We just showed up to win. I mean, I thought tonight was a fun game to be a part of. Kluber pitching, our defense was, there were some plays, you know, Hosey, Lindor, I mean, some really good plays. All the things we believe in, there's a reason we believe in it, because we think it's the best way to be a good team. I don't care what our record is. When you lose a bunch in a row, you know, you can't show up to the ballpark hanging your head or dragging your tail. It doesn't help. So on the flip side, you know, we want our guys showing up every day ready to play a good game. It's not because we don't value the importance of all winning and everything. Just we really value it. That's why we do it this way.
Do you reel in family and friends like you do with us when you start talking about the streak?
They don't. I got one really good buddy, one of my best friends, but he's notoriously bad luck. Everybody kind of refers to him as like the gray cloud. He knows who he is. You know, you talk about superstitions. I will not talk to him. He is a text only. Cost me one job. He's not getting away again.
He is the same person. He just said a bunch of stuff to shut everyone up, and that's two games into the season. He's already right back to where he was, and that's why I don't think he has any path. I mean, Notre Dame can do a lot better than Brian Kelly. We shouldn't be sitting here on a program with this of this magnitude arguing or debating or discussing whether Brian Kelly treated a reporter poorly. That should not be the point, but it is, and I think it's going to continue to be because I don't think he can get out of his own shadow. He's not going to be fired for losing one game, but if it's a close call, to me, the people at Notre Dame are going to look at incidents like that. That is the university on display, and it's a very bad look for a school that I still believe stands for the best in everything.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza, and my friends, it is indeed a final. From out east, just out east on I-80, the turnpike headed east toward Cleveland. They have just literally gone final. Cody Allen with a 3-up, 3-down ninth inning to secure win number 21 straight.
Can you dig it?
21 straight victories for the Cleveland Indians. They sweep the Tigers, and on and on and on and on it goes. The numbers are just simply not fathomable. You have no ability to fathom. It can't be done. You can't imagine it. You can't make sense of it. You can't understand it. Neither can I. Neither can they. It just continues. They now have tied the Chicago Cubs of 1935 with the longest consecutive streak in the that's before the modern era. Well, I guess it is modern era. But the only thing remaining left to be done now, with their 21st consecutive victory breaking the Oakland Athletics 2002 20 straight victories, for the American League record, the only thing left is the New York Giants of 1916, who won 26 straight games, thought by some to have been interrupted by a tie game, but we got clarification from the Elias Sports Bureau earlier today that that game did not count because it was replayed from its beginning the next day, won by the New York Giants, and thus the 26-game streak still remains in all of baseball history, modern day or otherwise. That is the next up on the Indians' target list. An absolutely mesmerizing run by the best team in the American League, and you could make the case, given the Los Angeles Dodgers' struggles, they finally snapped an 11-game losing streak last night. You could make the case that they are the best team in all of baseball, putting together a run that you will remember probably, hopefully, for the rest of your life. As a sports fan, understand I'm not equating this to historically significant things that have happened in the world. Just 2 days ago, of course, we commemorated the 16th anniversary of 9/11. Don't try to put it into any other context than sports. This is something you will remember for the rest of your life if you are a sports fan, particularly if you happen to be an Indians fan. Let's count this down for a second here if we can. Let me just say. It takes a while.
One.
Sorry about the little glitches there. I'm playing something from YouTube. I was looking for something to commemorate 21, and I came up with Sesame Street's abstract counting to 21 from YouTube, and that's exactly what you just heard there. The Indians now winners of 21. It took a while to count those. And, Jim, I mean, I heard a really interesting thing this morning. And thanks again for joining us for the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. I heard an interesting thing this morning. Just, you know, the last time the Indians lost a baseball game, Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather had not yet fought. Not a single college football game had been played yet this season. I mean, this is one of those things where, you know, you go back and you try to put into context how long this team has been winning. And the list is amazing. The statistics, the by-the-numbers, which, of course, are no longer accurate. I have a whole big list of by-the-numbers in the Indians' winning streak that I was going to present today. But now that the game has gone final, before we even hit the airwaves, they are all irrelevant. You have to increase them by whatever the numbers are today as they win 5-3. Mike Clevinger continues his terrific run. He finally got scored on, at least, but he continues his terrific run. There's just nobody. Cush, and correct me if I'm wrong. There's nobody that is not playing really good baseball right now with the Indians, and I mean this quite literally. Is there? Let me ask you. Rather than making the direct definitive statement, can you think of anybody, starter, reliever, or member of the lineup, or defensively, I suppose, can you think of anybody that's mired in a slump? Is there anybody that's in the midst of a, you know, 2 for his last 26, trying to get out of his own way, trying to make things happen? I mean, I'm looking at everybody from... And everybody's contributing, too. I'm looking at the starters from, you know, Lindor to Ramirez to Encarnacion and Bruce and on down. And everybody is contributing in major ways. To backups, you know, like Perez, the catcher, even. He is contributing mightily in this thing. Urshela, who comes on and makes some tremendous defensive play in the eighth inning today and is contributing offensively. Yande Diaz as well. Mike Clevinger, I can only think of one guy that jumps to mind to the front of my mind when I think about, is anybody not playing well as part of this 21-game winning streak? And that would be Danny Salazar, who came back off the DL to make a start, was not good, and was promptly put into the bullpen. And he's going to see if he can contribute in that role, because there is just not room for him in the starting rotation the way that all of these other guys are doing. Is there anybody not contributing? Is there anybody that's in a slump that probably feels like, damn, we're setting these records, 21 straight wins, outscoring our opponents by 104 runs. That's what the differential is now going into today's game. It was 102 during the streak. They are now outscoring their opponents by 104 runs with the two-run victory today. All of these things are going on, and I'm not contributing squat. They're carrying me. I'm not pulling my own weight. I don't know that there's anybody you can say that about, maybe with the exception of Salazar.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Salazar's maybe the one guy that didn't contribute, but pitching, starter, bullpen, any of the position players, and we've been in September now for 13 days, so that includes all the call-ups.
That's right.
That have come up, too.
That's what I mean. There's nobody even of the young guys. That's why I mentioned some of the call-up guys. Everybody is contributing. Everybody is playing good baseball or great baseball individually, while collectively the team has put up all of these crazy numbers.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And yes, pretty much everybody has contributed. I'm having a hard time. You're making me try to think who outside of maybe Salazar in that one outing, who is it that has? I can't think of anybody.
I kind of asked that rhetorically a little bit. Because I don't think you can name anybody. I mean, and here's an example of what I'm talking about. Let me give you just some of these numbers, okay? Going into the game today, during the historic 20-game winning streak, which is now 21, the Indians had outscored their opponents 134-32. That's plus 102 runs. It is now 104 runs because they ran 5-3 today, so it's 139-35. They're scoring 6.7 runs a game in the streak. That plus 102, which is now plus, well, let's just stay with the 102 because of the statistical accuracy here. The plus 102 going into today is the best 20-game margin in franchise history and the largest by any Major League Baseball team over any 20-game stretch of all wins or not since the 1939 Yankees, who had seven different 20-game spans of 104-plus. The best was 129 from August 11th to the 29th year. The 1939. Do you understand when we talk about history? I hope people understand what we're talking about right now in 2017 is historic. In 2087, 60 years from now, people are going to look back and talk about this Indians team and what they are doing. And it's going to measure with the greatest accomplishments, the greatest runs of all time. 21 wins now, plus 104. What did I say? 104. Let's see. They have plated double-digit runs six times in the 20-game stretch, now in the 21 stretch. They have outscored their opponents in innings 1-3 going into today's game, 64-12. Today it was 3-1, right? Because the Tigers jumped out on top 1-0. Then the three-run bomb in the bottom of the first by Jay Bruce. That was 3-1. Wasn't that where it was after three today,
yeah.
Jim?
Yep.
All right. So we'll add that to that total. So that would be 67-13. So plus 54 in innings 1-3, meaning they are jumping on top of teams early and then just riding the best rotation in baseball and the best bullpen in baseball to easy victories. They have scored first now in 19 of the 21 games in this streak, today being only the second non-lead they had. They have trailed for just four of the 189 innings of this streak. Think about that.
And that's still true despite the fact the Tigers scored first today.
I counted that today because they didn't end the inning that way because of
exactly.
Jay Bruce. Right. So still just four of the 189 innings. The offense going into today, Kush, was batting as a team 308 in the 20-game streak. 308 as a team. That's why I asked you. That's kind of what made me say, is there anybody not contributing to that? Is there anybody down there during the streak hitting 125? I don't think there is. 47 doubles, 6 triples, 39 home runs. That was, again, before today, which is more runs than they have allowed totally by the opponents, which was 32. Now with today, that total is 35, but the Indians got another home run. So it's 40 home runs to 35 runs by the opponents in the 21-game streak. I'm trying to update these as we go. The starting rotation going into this game had recorded 18 of the 20 wins. Now that's 19 of the 21 because Clevinger gets the dub today, while posting a 1.71 ERA in the streak. Now, I don't know how that changes today, but 1.71. And in the 20-game streak, your offensive leaders, Francisco Lindor hitting .364 over the last 20 games. Runner hits with runners in scoring position, Yandy Diaz, 6-for-16, .375. Home runs, Lindor, 9. RBIs, Lindor, 19. Runs, Lindor, 18. OPS, Ramirez, 1.342. Game started, Bauer, Carrasco, and Kluber have all started 4. Wins, Bauer and Kluber have won 4. Carrasco did not get the decision in the 1. Kluber, 35 strikeouts in the 20 games. His 4 starts, but in the streak. And complete games, Carrasco and Kluber each have 1. That was, again, going into today. Clevinger did not go the full distance today. So just some of the numbers just defy comprehension. This is now the longest winning streak in the history of the American League, passing the 20-gamer by the A's in 2002, the Moneyball A's. And, Jim, I'm looking. I'm trying to figure out when it will end. I asked you this question yesterday, and I don't know that there's an easy answer to it. You might point to tomorrow because Josh Tomlin, of all of the guys who are starting in the rotation, probably has had, you know, he hasn't been consistent because he was injured for quite a while, obviously. If there's anybody that is in potential jeopardy, and I think you phrased it this way, didn't you, yesterday, of having a Tomlin type of game,
yeah,
where he gives up some bombs,
sure,
and you just hope that there aren't guys on base when he does. I think that's how you phrased it yesterday. If anybody is potentially...
I think it was Lodi who phrased it that way. But I think it was Matt Lodi who phrased it
that
way.
Oh, Lodi said that. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. It's Tomlin against Jacob Junis or Junis. Do they pronounce a hard J or is it a...
Honestly, I have no idea.
All right. That's tomorrow against Kansas. These are all home. Next 4 against Kansas City are at home, so they're out there at Progressive Field again, which would get them to, if they were to take them all and to keep this thing running, that would get them to 25, one shy of that Kansas City, Kansas City. No, I'm sorry, New York Giants. I don't know where I'm getting Kansas City. Oh, they're playing Kansas City. Excuse me. The New York Giants from 1916. That would get them to within 1 before they have to go back on the road again.
Not only that, but
Hold on, let me just read these real quick. The matchups. Tomlin and Junis.
Okay.
Junis. Bauer and Vargas. That's a good matchup.
Yeah.
Vargas is 15-10. He's been their most effective pitcher for the
A worthy all-star that he was.
Yes. And Trevor Bauer, though, has been Corey Kluber,
yeah,
for the last month and a half. I mean, literally, putting up a better ERA than Kluber. That's a great matchup there. 16-8 against 15-10. That'll be something on Friday. Carlos Carrasco against Jason Hamill, huge advantage. And then Corey Kluber against, they haven't even announced yet. Just doesn't matter, whoever it is, huge advantage, Corey Kluber. Outside of the Tomlin matchup, well, I'll give Vargas, like I said, maybe an even opportunity, except for the fact that the Indians are swinging the bats so consistently against, it's an advantage for their pitcher over everybody else's pitcher. Jason Vargas has to face the Indians lineup with that 15-10 record. Trevor Bauer only has to face the Royals lineup on Friday. Josh Tomlin tomorrow has to face the Royals lineup, not the Indians. Jacob Junis has to face the Indians. So the advantage is still there. And, Kush, maybe I'm being idealistic, and maybe you're not supposed to count these things before they happen, and I'm not counting them, quite obviously. But my point is, if I had to predict when the streak comes to an end, I'm not predicting Kansas City to be the team to do it. I can see this very easily going from 21 to 25 by Sunday. And then it's, can they tie the all-time historic record from 19? 15-16 when they go back out on the road on Monday.
Yeah.
And I can't remember where they go. Where do
it's
they
a, Monday's an off day, and then it's a West Coast trip to the Angels Mariners for six.
Okay, that's right, which is a very, very different kind of a story. That's a tough place to go get things done, obviously. Just the West Coast trip, whether it's Angels or Mariners or anybody else, it's a West Coast trip.
Yep.
So I don't know, Jim. We don't have to come up to with this answer right now, but I think everybody is wondering when will they lose again, because it's getting hard to remember when they lost last. That's how long it's been. It's getting hard to remember how long, you know, what was going on in the world. You know, the hurricanes hadn't happened, either one of them. You know,
I spun it this way for me, Bob. Yeah. Today is my little one's third week to the day when she started preschool. Day one of her, or kindergarten, I should say, day one of kindergarten for her was the last time the Indians lost a game.
Wow. There you go. That's
just
exactly
me personally. My family feels like so much has happened in 3 weeks.
So since we can't figure out really what was going on the last time they lost, I think it's just kind of incumbent to, you know, it's normal to think what will be going on when they lose again? How far into the future will this run? And the way things are going, honestly. Although the Tigers gave them a little bit of a scare, not too terribly much. They just
to their credit, despite everything going on with the Tigers, last night and this afternoon, they played well. To their
credit. Yes, they did. When you get routed 11-0 in the first game of a series, anything you do better than that is going to make you feel better.
Right.
And it was 2-0 yesterday, but it was still a complete game shutout by Corey Kluber as he continues his run toward the Cy Young Award. And I think it gets more and more solid that he's going to win that every day. And then today, 5-3. So certainly they played better, but the Indians are just playing better than everybody at every given moment. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
It's quite all right, because there's so many angles one can go at from this. Here's a couple of extra ones, you know, for me. Number one, they have now 16 games overall left in the season. And a couple of these things are various things that I would not have thought possible just a few weeks ago. You know, they're 2.5 up by my count now. For the top spot in the AL, which plays out to really 3.5 because they have the tiebreaker, right, over Houston. That's something about a month ago I never would have thought possible. Here's another one for you, Bob. Overall for the season, this number 21 that they got this afternoon, that's win number 90 on the year. Streak aside, do you think they can go 10-6 down the stretch? Because 10-6 equals 100 wins.
Yeah.
Another thing I didn't think would have been possible a month ago.
Again, I would have to look at the rest of the games. You said they got Angels,
three Angels on the road. Kansas City for four. Then it's three Angels on the road, three Mariners on the road, back to home for Twins 3, White Sox 3.
Yes.
Okay, they should win. They should at least take 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 in every one of those series. That would actually get them to 100 wins at this point.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
Yeah, I completely agree.
The last point is, if my count is right, they came into this afternoon's game with a magic number of 5 for the American League Central. Now that they've won, that's down to 4. So if the streak continues until they can break tie the Giants record on the West Coast like you were talking about, that would mean a 4-game sweep of Kansas City. That would also mean Sunday, regardless of what Minnesota does the rest of this week, Sunday would be the day they officially clinch the division, too.
Wow. Simply amazing things happening right now, Kush. And you know what? While we talk about all of these crazy numbers, you know what it calls to mind for me? It calls to mind a wild stat.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
And let's indeed give you your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. While many have been focused on the Indians' history that they are making, let's go to the Minnesota Twins. Made some history of their own last night in a 16-0 shellacking of the San Diego Padres. Twins homered in each of the first 7 innings of the game. That set a new Major League Baseball record for home runs in consecutive innings to start a game. They also tied the Cincinnati Reds, by the way, from September 4th of 1999, who also hit a homer in 7 straight innings in that game. So there you go. A little bit of history being made by the Minnesota Twins last night. All right, before we do anything else, let's shift gears, talk a little football now, because I cannot wait for week number two of the NFL season. Why? Well, because I want to see if the Browns can build on what they did in a loss, kind of a moral victory type thing, game number two against the Ravens. And I want to see if the Lions are going to play around in a first half of a scrappy, sloppy kind of a game before Matthew Stafford has to rescue them again to see if they can go 2-0. But also because I want to win money. And that's where FanDuel Fantasy Football comes in. You know that over 2.5 million people have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel? That's why I'm talking about it. Look, it just makes it a whole heck of a lot more fun to watch the games when you've got your own games going on within the games. And if you had Matthew Stafford last week, for example, and you saw those 4 second-half touchdowns, my goodness, you were racking up the points and maybe racking up the bucks as well when you see a guy like Kareem Hunt going off. Question is, and here's the great thing about FanDuel, by the way. You get to start over every week. If you're in a traditional fantasy football league and you drafted David Johnson, who had to be one of the top 2, 3, 4 picks in the entire league in your draft because of the tremendous running and receiving production he brings to the Cardinals and brought last year, you're screwed. He's gone probably for the entire season. Maybe they say he might be back around Christmas time, but you're sunk. But at FanDuel, you're not. Because you just redraft each week. Start with your own new roster and just choose your team and watch your score in real time. That's why we play FanDuel Fantasy Football. If you want to play and you want to win some cash, you got to get on board now at FanDuel.com. Click the Join Now button at FanDuel.com and use my code France. If you're a new user and you've never done this before, you're going to get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million with over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. That's FanDuel.com, the promo code France, F-R-A-N-T-Z, to get into that Sunday Million for free. FanDuel.com, promo code F-R-A-N-T-Z, void where prohibited. All right, we got a lot more baseball to talk about. The Dodgers, I mentioned, snapped their streak. We'll talk a little bit about any moral victories that might have been achieved by the Tigers in the last two games of that series. But, yes, a heck of a lot more about the history-making Indians as we continue on the extravaganza right here. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, buddy, it is indeed the extravaganza. And, hey, I want to tell you about my man Steve at Car Stereo One. You know, when it comes to car audio, you know there's no better place to go than Car Stereo One. That's obvious. But today I want to tell you about the window tint special. Steve at Car Stereo One has the most popular window tint package in Toledo. All you have to do is go to Car Stereo One at their new location, 3120 West Central Ave, and ask Steve for the good stuff. You choose the shade you want, and you'll get it done for just $149. That's right. Any shade you want from Car Stereo One, just $149, and that comes with a lifetime warranty. Now, to get that special window tint pricing, just see Steve at Car Stereo One, mention the code word TURTLE, and you'll get your tint on for just $149. For more details on window tint and more, just click on CarStereoOne.com. Of course, I was giving crazy numbers there about that great price at Car Stereo One. Here's crazier numbers when it comes to the way Mike Clevinger has been pitching. The winning pitcher today in the Indians-Tigers game, the wrap-up of the season series for these two teams. Mike Clevinger, I mean, this is something, you know, I mentioned Bauer has been better than Kluber for the last month.
Right.
So is Clevinger for the last four starts. Mike Clevinger in his last four starts is 4-0 with an ERA of 0.38.
That's crazy.
23 2/3 innings pitched, and opponents are hitting just 186 off of him in that run. I mean, it's to the point where, you know, if they're still doing this in October, you kind of have to go four men, right? You don't need to go three. I could certainly see Terry Francona wanting to go, you know, Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer, back to Kluber again. I can certainly understand that.
Especially in maybe a best-of-five division series.
What's that?
Especially maybe in a best-of-five division series.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you talk about what Clevinger has done here, I mean, I don't have any idea how you keep him out of that. I mean, what do you do, put him in the bullpen? As great as he has been as a starter, I mean, he has really stepped up. And, you know, and become a major part of the rotation. Obviously, Tomlin would be a bullpen guy, you know, and you know, of course, you got to get back down to 25 man. I don't know what they're going to do with that bullpen, to be quite honest with you. It's so effective the way that it is. And you got to make room for Andrew Miller, who could be back as early as tomorrow, I believe.
Yeah, the way they're talking, it sounds like barring something weird in the next 12 hours or so. It sounds like they're going to activate him for tomorrow.
Yeah, so that's that'll be very interesting to see how Terry Francona manages that. But what did you say the magic number was? Five?
The magic number was five coming into today, I believe, so it should be down to four now,
regardless
of what the Twins do later.
It's very possible, if not probable, truly, that you could see them celebrating with champagne before they leave town to go out on their West Coast trip.
Yeah, like I said.
You got four left.
Yeah, like I said, even if the Twins are to win every day between now and Sunday, if the Indians continue this streak through the weekend and sweep the Royals, it doesn't matter what the Twins do. That's the other four right there.
Well, no, I mean, I thought you said it's five. Oh, it was five going into
today.
It was
today. Five so going
in.
Yeah, it's five going into today. It's five going into today, so now it's four.
Okay, so yeah, so they don't have to worry about the Twins. They can just take care of it themselves.
Right.
And if the streak does come to an end, and let's say they win three out of four or whatever the case might be, you know, I mean, the odds are the Twins aren't going to go on a four-game run either. So I mean, the chances are very, very good. There's a high probability, I guess, it's fair to say that they will indeed be celebrating their championship before they go on the West Coast trip. And I wonder, once that happens, if that changes anything in their mindset, particularly if the streak is still alive. If they go from 21 to 25 by the time the Royals leave town out there in Cleveland and then they head west, I just, you know, and they have their celebration and they dump champagne and they have the off day Monday, as you pointed out, which probably is a great thing because then they can recover from, you know, the celebration.
Right.
Before that champagne actually gets spilled into a few mouths. Usually it's sprayed over, you know, on faces and over people's
right,
heads.
Right, not to mention the plane trip out to L.A.
Yeah, there you go. You know, they'll have some chance, you know, some time to recover. But I just wonder if it doesn't become it certainly won't be anticlimactic because they want to keep their edge over the Astros and have the best record in the American League. And who knows if the Dodgers stay in their funk. Yes, they broke their losing streak of 11 yesterday with a win over the hapless San Francisco Giants. But they're still in a situation where they have lost 16 of their last 18.
Mm-hmm.
It's entirely possible the Indians would still be playing for home field advantage throughout the playoffs, including the World Series. But I just wonder if they have their celebration and then they head west, if things don't just exhale a little bit, you know, or if it's still just as intense and as, and maybe I should pause there as you analyze all this. I don't know how intense it really is. Maybe that's one of the reasons why the streak continues to roll, because nobody is intense, because nobody is tense. Yes,
yeah.
They know how to bear down when they need to, but to be quite honest with you, Jim, as we pointed out, plus 102 going into today, plus 104 now in the streak.
Yeah.
You know, there haven't been a lot of times when they've had to bear down. You know, there just hasn't been. So I don't, you know, I'm not saying I know what the answer is, but maybe it's their ability to relax, or the fact that they have been able to relax and haven't had to put the hammer down, so to speak, is one of the reasons why they continue to roll.
Well, and if you're wondering what might they do once they clinch things, I don't think it's going to change a lot of things. And here's what I mean. There's a lot of experimenting that has to go on. Example, you're about to get Andrew Miller back. You got to make sure you want to slowly these last couple weeks work him up so that by game one of the division series, he's the Andrew Miller we saw last October. No matter how good they've been, he just provides that much more of a jolt when he's in and doing his thing. So that's one. Number two, all this talk about that we've been hearing the last couple days, especially since Bradley Zimmer busted his hand on Sunday night, is, are you going to see Jason Kipnis playing outfield for the first time since college? You know, that's something that's getting talked about. So they're going to probably play with that. It would not surprise me if somebody like a Ryan Merritt gets a start or two. Why not give all the starters extra rest, especially in a post-clinching at least the division situation, and have a six-man or two? You might see these kind of things down the stretch.
That, Jim, because again, this is why Terry Francona gets paid what he gets paid, so he can figure this stuff out. But for me, I'm looking at it and going, why would I want to give them extra rest? They're working perfectly on the rest they're getting. If we give them extra rest, does it throw off their rhythm? Does it take them all out of their routine? That sort of thing. So, you know, you wonder which is the right way to approach that. Give them the extra rest and give Merritt some time, et cetera, or just let's, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Let them go on their regular rotation.
Yeah, I mean, you might. These are possibilities. Definitely the Miller thing and the Kipnis thing are almost certain to happen. You're going to want a few games to, you know, experiment with, you know, with that, as they might end up with a platoon. And I hate to say this, you know, because no matter what sport, you hate to lose your job via injury. But man, Bob, I really, really like them defensively when it's Ramirez at second. And preferably Urshela, but I suppose Yandy Diaz at third. That is a blatantly better defensive infield than if Kipnis is there.
Yeah, I think
and
I would
he's
agree.
Had a career poor year on top of the injuries, but you want him in this lineup somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. He might. You know what's interesting? I asked you at the top of the show, or as we, you know, as they won the their 21st straight. I ask you if anybody is slumping. The strange part about that is the one guy who really might describe that, you know, who might fit that description is Kipnis. But he hasn't been playing because he's been injured. But even when he was playing, you know, he's the one who's kind of struggling down there with that batting average. He hasn't been as consistent, obviously, and had the second half that he wanted to have, then gets injured again, and he's been in and out. He's probably about the only guy. And you know what else just made me think of that, or what I just thought of in addition to that, Jim, is they've been doing all of this without Michael Brantley. How long's Brantley been down?
Since before the streak began, I know that.
And so they're doing this without some of the key guys. He's the number three hitter in their lineup, for crying out loud, or he was, you know, before that. So it's just an amazing thing to see. Without Miller, without Kipnis, and without Brantley, three core players, and I mean core. Not of their 25-man roster, but probably, you know, if you were to name their five most important players, those three guys might be three of the five, you know, and along with Lindor and probably Ramirez and, I don't know, Kluber. But you know, they're among the most important players on this team, and they're not there. And they're still doing this without them, and that, to me, says something simply special. Let me ask you something. If you are in Houston right now, or you're in Boston, and you're watching all of this, any intimidation factor, any questioning of, oh, my God, I don't want to see those guys in the postseason. This is ridiculous. It's one thing to be hot and go on an 8-gamer. It's another thing to be scorching and go on a 12-gamer. It's historic to be on a 21-gamer. I don't want to see those guys. Everything they do is right.
I mean, though, I don't think they'd say anything like that out loud. I bet the best out loud thing to say, well, thank goodness our front office made that last-minute deal for Justin Verlander. That's one thing they might be saying.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that, man, now we're probably going to have to take on the Red Sox and Chris Sale in a game one. Thank goodness we'll be in Houston for that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you mean Boston?
Yeah. Yeah, because Houston is now going to end up getting Boston if all of this holds. The Indians have a 2.5-game lead on Houston. So instead of what my assumption's been like all summer, Bob, until a couple of weeks ago when I had to start entertaining this possibility, is that Houston won't get the wild card because they won't be the one spot. They'll end up having to take on the Red Sox. So thank goodness they now have Verlander, and thank goodness they will probably have home field in that series.
Right, gotcha. Yeah, and you know, I love the idea of them facing Verlander. I mean, you know, no diss on the Tigers, but
Verlander Sale would be a pretty nifty game one.
Yeah, what I mean is I'm talking about if the Indians had to face Verlander.
Right, I gotcha. Okay,
yeah,
that would be really funny.
Because they have dominated him. They have just destroyed him for the last couple of seasons. Now, it's been with the Tigers, obviously, but you know, there just comes a time where you figure out or you realize somebody has somebody else's number. So no matter whether they played Sale, and they rocked Sale the last time they played him, or they were to face Verlander, they have just owned Verlander. It's just truly a, you know, it's a thing to behold the way they have the way they have dominated their top competition that they should face in October. So just some amazing things. I've got more numbers, but I don't want to, you know, it's hard not to want to beat this in the ground. Do you think, speaking of that, do you think that the national media has given this enough love? Have they given this, you know, when it was 18, when it was 19, when it was 20, and now that it's getting to be 21 and beyond, maybe it'll really change. But do you think that they are getting enough love?
No, probably not. I probably don't. I mean, it's very easy to say our top affiliation of ESPN would be having way too much fun way a long time ago if this was the Yankees or the Red Sox doing this.
Yeah,
that's unfortunately
exactly
sad, but true.
Yeah, it really is.
So
sad,
they're a little late
really
to the party,
true,
but there's no way for them to avoid it now. It has to be story number one until further notice, even for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, because, you know, if you listen to Mike and Mike in the morning, you know, they start off with off the top. And almost for a lot of the streak, it was just almost obligatory. It's like, okay, well, the Indians won again. And they just kind of moved on from it relatively quickly. And that's a little strange given that Golic, of course, is a Cleveland native. So he, you know, the Indians are his club. But there's a feeling that you get that if this was the Cubs, because they're defending champions, if it was the Yankees or the Red Sox, because they are where they are in the markets that they are, or if it was the Dodgers, who, of course, had these kinds of runs but not historic like this, that it would be a lot different in terms of the respect, the coverage, et cetera, that, you know, that they would have been given. But it's Cleveland, and it's kind of like, yeah, it'll end soon enough. And it just hasn't ended. And now today, they spent the first half hour of the show, I think, on this, particularly because Golic was going to try to prove that the New York Giants' 1916 26 straight wins wouldn't count because of one of them being a tie. And they, you know, they talked about it for a very, very long time. But the point being that now that they are up here and they just passed the A's and tied the 1935 Cubs, tomorrow, if they win in the first game against the Royals, they will, of course, break that modern record and then chase the 26. They have no choice now. But I just wonder if these guys are really getting their due. Because I'll be honest with you, John, I don't know that I am. I don't know that I'm giving them enough love. Meaning, I said this at the beginning, you know, in 2087, you know, 70 years from now, you know, your kids or grandkids are going to be telling their kids about something like this. You know, my son is 14. If he's still around then, I want him to understand and appreciate what he is seeing now in the historical makeup of this.
Yeah.
I doubt very seriously anybody in 1916, when they won 26 in a row with those New York Giants, I doubt anybody there was thinking, you know, this is really, you know, something that's going to be talked about 100 years from now because it will never have been broken.
Yeah.
But it's a little different now because of our ability to catalog everything by way of, you know, online, and you can replay these moments over and over again from YouTube and so on and so forth. But I just want people to appreciate it while they have it.
Touche.
So, okay, let's see. What do we got coming up here? Coming up at the bottom of the next hour at about 4:35, by the way, we're going to talk to Brendan Riley. We're going to talk college football. Brendan Riley is a Notre Dame writer with 18stripes.com. We're going to talk to Brendan about Brian Kelly and whether or not Brian Kelly is on a hot seat. There was a really interesting piece. You just heard it in the montage at the top of the hour that Kush had from Paul Feinbaum talking about Brian Kelly perhaps not being long for the Notre Dame job, not just because he's losing football games, but because he is completely embarrassing the university by acting like perhaps the most pompous ass going in college football. And in college football, Nick Saban still works there. So that's saying something. We're going to talk to Brendan Riley about that. If you're a fan of the Fighting Irish, and I know there's a lot of people in Northwest Ohio who do, they don't lean toward Columbus, they don't lean toward Ann Arbor, they lean toward South Bend. If you're one of them, I want to know what is your impression of Brian Kelly and whether or not you think he should remain as the head coach at Notre Dame for all of the reasons that you heard Feinbaum talking about and that Brendan Riley and I, when Jim, will talk about too. So we're going to get into that a little bit later on. Jim, we're approaching the top of the hour, but do we have time to take Jimmy's call now, or should we wait until after the top?
I'd say we have enough time for it. Right,
let's bring him in here. Jimmy in Toledo is always a great conversation with us, but I don't want to cut him too short here. Jimmy, go ahead, man. What did you want to say about this streak?
Oh, hey, man, I love it. It's just a I mean, I'm not going to be too hard on the Indians, but, I mean, I'm a Tigers fan, so it's not sour grapes, but if the Tigers had been absolutely gutted, and it's no fault of the Indians. They played who they played, and that's their major league teams, but it's just a shame. If the Tigers even had half a lineup, I don't think the streak would have continued, but they can't. They still, they're playing who they're, you know, who the lineup is, and that's all legitimate. Certainly more legitimate than that point that Golic brought up. I don't know how that counts when you have a tie, so I give credit where credit is due. The Indians should have the record already as far as I'm concerned.
Well, no. Because you know what they did, Jimmy, and I waited until that whole thing played itself out, talking about Elias Sports Bureau, which recognizes the 26th gamer by the New York Giants as the record. And the way I did that, or the way he explained it, the president or head or the whatever you want to call the leader of Elias Sports Bureau said is, the game that is widely referred to and regarded as a tie essentially never happened. Golic was right until he said they replayed that game. They didn't pick it up from the point where it was tied after nine innings and they called it because of darkness or rain or whatever it was, the way they would do today. They essentially played a doubleheader the next day to make up for that game that ended in a tie, which essentially nullified that game. It didn't happen. It didn't exist. The only thing that did keep are the individual at-bats and pitching lines and so on and so forth. So the everybody basically got an extra game to add to their stats, but from a wins and losses perspective, that game essentially did not happen because they started it over the next day, played from inning one, played a game, then played the regularly scheduled game, which the Giants won both of. So there was never an interruption in the winning streak. That's the way the guy from Elias explained it today, and even Golic said, okay, then I submit, because that's not the way it was being presented. It was being presented that there was a tie and that
okay, I see what you're saying. And in some cases, they actually won a doubleheader in the streak. Didn't the Indians win a doubleheader in their streak too?
Good question. Good question.
I think they did in Minnesota, didn't they?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure they had a rainout. Yeah.
Remember, Jimmy? Do you remember?
It was a rainout.
Did they have any doubleheaders in the streak?
There was a rainout.
Yeah, they had the back-to-back doubleheaders to close out the sweep in Yankee Stadium, and then came to Detroit first day of September and swept that doubleheader.
Okay. Yeah, I think I remember something about them having to stop off on a roadie from the West Coast and having to finish up one in Minnesota or something that had been rained out. So they should get a lot of credit, because first of all, their streak, they were flying back and forth on the West Coast, so that's even worse than trains in the 20s. But listen, I want to also get to Verlander. I don't know if anybody realizes what he did last night. He gave up a leadoff hit, and then he went eight innings of no-hit baseball. They never scored. They never got another hit. And he won 1-0.
That was only a second start, right, with the Astros?
Yeah.
That was only a second
yeah.
start since the trade, and he was very sharp in the first one as well, so...
He's
starting to do what he did last year. He finished
right,
so strong in the second half last year that he damn near won the Cy Young and perhaps probably should.
Well, he should have. He got left off the ballot by two idiots down in Tampa Bay. That's what cost him. He actually had more first and second place votes. Two writers that shouldn't have ballots anymore left him off entirely. If they'd have just even put him at seventh place, he'd have won the Cy Young. But that really gnaws on me, because Kluber's going to win another one, and he's going to actually have more Cy Youngs than Justin Verlander. And Verlander's finished runner-up more times than anybody else. And it's just that really pains me. But anyways, you said that they've been dominating Verlander, but the last two Septembers they haven't. And it's just interesting. I think the Indians need to lose, and they need to lose a few. Because I tell you what, I'd be real nervous. And I'm going to root for the Indians if Houston's eliminated, because I'm a Verlander fan first and foremost. I got to see that guy. It pains me to see him in a Houston uniform, but by God, if he's got to win a World Series to make this all worth it, then that's what I want.
Well,
but if he
doesn't
get there, I'll want the...
That's a worthy thing to do. We talked about this a little yesterday with Ashley
Ashley McLennan from BlessYouBoys.com.
BlessYouBoys. I wanted to say Pride of Detroit. BlessYouBoys. So I was trying to think. Anyway, and she's kind of said the same thing. You know, it sucks as a Tigers fan to see him gone, but if you can see him succeed and reach his ultimate goal, which is to win a World Championship,
right,
then it makes you feel a little bit better if you're a Tiger fan.
But if he doesn't get there, I'll absolutely root for the Indians. But I wouldn't count on thinking that the dominance that the Indians have had over. You know, they have done pretty well against them the last 2 years, especially earlier in the year. But the guy that you're liable to face in the postseason, that ain't going to be the same guy. So, and if you need to get the streak done and over with and behind you, you definitely do.
I feel
that would make me awful nervous.
Something that has been building for a while, and I got to run. Thanks, Jimmy. We're
late. All right, brother. Later.
Verlander dominated the Indians for the period of like 3 or 4 years prior to, I want to say, 2016. And ever since then, the Indians have simply paid it back in spades. They have just rocked Justin Verlander on a very, very consistent basis. And I think they have his number. I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's tipping pitches that they see that nobody else does. But they have had him. And I feel like if they do it in the postseason, it'll be the same way. All right, great conversation. Let's get a timeout now for the top of the hour Sports Center. Come back with hour number two right here on ESPN 106 Side of the Ticket.
Kluber, 15-4, leads the league in ERA at 2.56.
Went right back out there and locked him up.
swung on and missed. He struck him out. Slugs this one high in the air, deep to left. Presley is back, looking up. It is gone. Francisco Lindor puts the Indians on the board first here tonight with a leadoff homer. In the dirt. Allen's off for second. Coming home, Santana is safe. And a wild pitch makes it 2-0 Cleveland. Needing one more out. Slow chopper to third. Urshela will flip the first. It's in the bag, and the Indians have won their 20th consecutive game. They have tied Oakland for the American League record. And Corey Kluber authors the complete game shutout. It's this one high in the air. Deep left. Back is Presley. He's out of room. It is off the top of the wall. Three-run shot for Jay Bruce, and the Indians go on top 3-1.
And the 0-2 is a fastball hit well to center. Deep, back is Jones. He's looking up. It is gone. That's Nuvenair City. Roberto Perez, home run number 6 on the year. And it gives the Indians a little bit of breathing room, now up 5-3.
Ian Kinsler at the plate, 0-4 on the afternoon. Swings at the first pitch and a line drive to left field. Caught by Lonnie Chisenhall. It's over. 21 in a row. The Cleveland Indians have set a new record for the longest win streak in American League history.
We keep saying it, but I think it's more a mindset than anything. Just coming to the field every day and trying to win that game. You know, we haven't gotten caught up in a winning streak or been worrying about that or anything. Honestly, it's just every day is a new day starting over.
Well, and again, I don't look at it like everything's on the line. We just showed up to win. I mean, I thought tonight was a fun game to be a part of. Kluber pitching. Our defense was, there were some plays, you know, Hosey, Lindor, I mean, some really good plays. All the things we believe in, there's a reason we believe in it, because we think it's the best way to be a good team. I don't care what our record is. When you lose a bunch in a row, you know, you can't show up to the ballpark hanging your head or dragging your tail. It doesn't help. So on the flip side, you know, we want our guys showing up every day ready to play a good game. It's not because we don't value the importance of winning and everything. Just we really value it. That's why we do it this way.
Do you reel in family and friends like you do with us when you start talking about the streak?
They don't. I got one really good buddy, one of my best friends, but he's notoriously bad luck. Everybody kind of refers to him as like the gray cloud. He knows who he is. You know, you talk about superstitions. I will not talk to him. He is a text only. Cost me one job. He's not getting away again.
He is the same person. He just said a bunch of stuff to shut everyone up. And that's two games into the season. He's already right back to where he was. And that's why I don't think he has any path. I mean, Notre Dame can do a lot better than Brian Kelly. We shouldn't be sitting here on a program with this of this magnitude arguing or debating or discussing whether Brian Kelly treated a reporter poorly. That should not be the point, but it is. And I think it's going to continue to be because I don't think he can get out of his own shadow. He's not going to be fired for losing one game, but if it's a close call, to me, the people at Notre Dame are going to look at incidents like that. That is the university on display, and it's a very bad look for a school that I still believe stands for the best in everything.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two rolling now here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader. We still got a lot of really good stuff to talk about today. Coming up at about 4:35. We're going to talk a little bit about that Brian Kelly situation. We played the audio for you before of him berating a reporter for simply asking a very valid question after his team lost, a very bad game, and he just continues to embarrass the university. If you're an Irish fan, if you're a Notre Dame fan, in all seriousness, I would love to hear your take on Brian Kelly. Do you want this guy to remain the head coach of your football team to represent you in the way that he is? I think he's a bully. I think he's a bad dude. And I don't mean, you know, it sounds very casual and colloquial. He doesn't strike me as a good person. That's going to sound really mean. It's going to sound really cruel. How do you know? You don't know him. I don't. You're right. I don't know him personally. But he strikes me as being a me first. I don't care about you or what you are doing. I care about how this impacts me, very self-centered, narcissistic kind of a person. I don't like him. I didn't like him when they hired him. I didn't like him in Cincinnati. I didn't like him, when he you know, took the team to a national championship game, and I don't like him now that he's a 500 coach. And I certainly don't like him the way that he talks to other people. It just bothers me. We're going to talk to Brendan Riley, 18stripes.com. That's the Notre Dame SB Nation website coming up at about 4:35. Hey, I want to remind you, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket has a chance for you to win a trip to one of six European destinations.
What?
Yeah. Go Euro style from Toledo Express Airport via Charlotte, North Carolina. Details and qualifying start Monday right here on the Extravaganza from Toledo Express Airport, the Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and, of course, Toledo sports leader, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. I do have more stats, and I do have more information on that streak. The Indian streak, of course, which pushed out to 21 games today with the win over the Tigers. They swept the Tigers again. It is now 21. We can talk about the Tigers, but we know where they are. Let's just talk about the – in fact, Kush, I want to play something real fast.
Okay.
Before I go to the calls on Notre Dame. Because you played a little bit of the audio of Terry Francona last night after win 20 of the streak.
Right, yeah.
But I've got just a tad bit more from today.
Ooh, nice.
After 21, and I know it's hard to get all that stuff in the middle of a show. The game went final literally as we were turning the microphones on at the top of the 3 o'clock hour today. So we're trying to kind of keep you posted, and you heard a little bit of audio and highlights from last night in that montage at the top of the hour, along with some of the audio highlights of today. But what we did not hear is Terry Francona, again, doing his best to dodge the streak. You know, he talk about a guy who's able to take things one game at a time and not talk about the historical aspect of this, but to really, really keep it into perspective. I don't know that there's anybody better managing baseball today, or really in recent memory, than Terry Francona is at doing it. So just a little bit from their postgame today.
I mean, I think they're enjoying themselves. They should. I mean, I think what's kind of cool about our game is when you do things and you do them the right way, like hitting streaks or, you know, I think it means more when you're not going out of your way to, you know, like with a hitting streak, somebody hits 3-0 when you're down 5 runs. And our guys are playing the game to win the right way. So that part's really meaningful. You know, they should enjoy what they're doing. It's pretty special.
And it's a great point there that he made, too. If you're losing a bunch of games in a row, you don't come into the clubhouse down with your chin on your chest any more than if you're winning a bunch of games in a row, you come in flying high like, you know, we can't be beat. You've got to stay in the moment. And, Jim, I don't know. And this, I love Buck Showalter of the Orioles. I really do. One of the great managers going. I've really had a lot of respect for him for a long time. You know, you could point to a lot of guys, you know, as really good players, managers, but who also understand, when I say players, that the players love playing for them, but they don't walk all over them. You know, that kind of thing.
I get what you're saying.
There's a few guys like that, but I don't know that anybody does it better than Terry Francona does. He just knows how to motivate guys the right way, day in and day out. Don't put your head in the clouds. Don't put your chin on your chest. Stay in the moment. Let's do what we got to do. And tomorrow, it's not about looking for a win 22 in a row. It's about looking for a win. Tomorrow, we got to beat the Royals. That's it. And I think that's the way that it's really working out for them. All right, let me talk. Speaking of head coaches, or managers in the case of Francona, but we'll go and transition to the head coaches. Let's talk about Brian Kelly in Notre Dame with Tim in Sylvania. Tim, you are a Notre Dame fan, I would assume, yes?
Well, not necessarily. I follow Notre Dame,
okay,
and I subscribe to their paper.
Okay.
I'm a Miami of Ohio graduate.
All right.
And there would be no Notre Dame football program today if it wasn't for Eric Parsegian, also a Miami grad.
Okay, fair enough. And that's good. So you follow them even though that's not your first team. So let's talk about the way this team is represented by the likes of Brian Kelly. Are you a fan of this guy as the head coach? Do you
like
the team represented by him?
No, I'm not, because I'll tell you who he reminds me of, and this, I don't want to bring politics in, but in a way it does. He reminds me of Hillary Clinton, because whenever everything starts falling apart, it's never his damn fault.
That's a really interesting comparison, and I don't want to do the political thing either, but I think you're right. He finds ways to make everybody else accountable for the mistakes that his team makes or the troubles that his program is going through. And the arrogance that comes from a guy who has it's one thing if you're Nick Saban and you've won, what, 4 national championships at Alabama? I think it's 4. You have the successful track record to justify your arrogance. You still don't want to be arrogant. I don't like guys who are arrogant, conceited, poppy, cocky, or you know, narcissistic. But you at least have the record that says, here's why I feel the way I do about myself. Brian Kelly doesn't have that. He doesn't have that resume to justify his own arrogance, and that's one of the things that I think that rubs a lot of people, including me, the wrong way.
I think narcissist is the perfect description of the man.
Yeah, I think that's very true. He is very, very full of himself. He believes that nobody can do it better than him. He believes that nobody has the right to question him on how he does it, and that, of course, is what has led to this controversy that he finds himself in.
And one last thing, I'm an amateur psychologist.
Yeah.
And he's not very tall, and he has a Napoleonic complex.
Ah, the Napoleon complex. Yeah, I didn't really think about that. I don't know how tall is he anyway.
I don't know, but I'm going to say at best he's like 5'9 or something like that.
Okay, well, that's not that short. When I think of the Napoleon complex, I think of these short guys who are 5'4", and then they want to start fights with every 6'4" they see just to show how tough they are. You know, that's the Napoleonic complex that I see. But I certainly see the narcissism that he shared with Napoleon, and yes, I'll throw it in there with Hillary Clinton as well.
And I also believe I'm retired, but my secretary, you know, according, I still talk to her about once a week, and she's a big-time Notre Dame fan.
Right.
And I told her, Kelly's got to go, and her response to me was, well, who are they going to replace him with? That's a primo job. They would not have a hard time finding a lot of excellent candidates for that job.
I would imagine, yeah. Here's the thing. You're right, and in a way, you might be a little off, and here's why. Notre Dame has academic standards, and I'm trying to say this in a way that won't offend other schools, but they have academic standards sometimes that other schools don't have. It's hard to get into Notre Dame. It's like a Duke basketball player. You can't just be, you know, have a 42-inch vertical and have scored 39 points a game in high school and what Coach K gets you. You've got to qualify. You've got to get into that school, and they don't make exceptions because you're a great player. Ditto Notre Dame. And there's other schools, too. Stanford is very, very high in that regard, too. There are a lot of them. But it's hard to take that job if you know that you might be losing out on blue-chip prospects who can go to, you know, I don't want to name another school and make it sound like they don't take their academics seriously, but they can go someplace else and get in, and they can't get into your school, and no matter how much they want to, you can't get them. And that does maybe, I think, push some guys away from maybe applying for the Notre Dame job.
Well, I agree with you on Stanford, but the other thing about Stanford, in recent memory, they've been beating the living tar out of Notre Dame.
That's true, too. That's a very good point, too.
Good talking to you, Bob.
Thank you, Tim. God bless you, brother. Thanks for the phone call. That's what I'm talking about. If you have not yet heard what we're talking about, I just want to hit you with this real quick. This was what embarrassed Notre Dame so much so that, you know, Paul Feinbaum, which we had in the montage there, he's talking about how he thinks Brian Kelly's days are numbered at Notre Dame simply because of his treatment of reporters, his arrogant, narcissistic attitude. That, you know, it's one thing if you're winning, like I said before, if you're winning all of your games and you're dominating and so on and so forth, you can get away with a certain amount of behavior. But if you're struggling to win games on the consistent basis you're expected to in South Bend, and you're treating people like this, you're just asking to be shown the door.
Obviously, the time of changed the culture, everything. But obviously, you lost in the very end, kind of like last year, 7-8 losses.
What was the question?
How do you keep this from snowballing?
It's not going to snowball. Next question.
Well, what exactly will be different, I guess?
There's nothing different. I go to work every day, and I coach my football team.
Okay.
Is that good enough for you?
Yes, I was just asking about how it was different from last year's with losing by one possession.
Okay.
Tonight was also like that. So I was just
losing by one possession?
Yeah.
No, it was 1 point.
Okay.
Great, thanks.
All right. Audio quality left a little something to be desired there, but I think you can make it out. The reporter asked a very, very valid question after a close 1-point loss to Georgia. Hey, you lost a bunch of one-possession games last year, too, Coach. How are you going to stop it from snowballing this year? And you heard him. First, he wouldn't let her ask the question. What's the question? Then she asked the question, and he dismisses it and says, there's nothing to it. It's not going to snowball. Well, she said, why? What's going to be different? There's nothing different. I coach my team. Okay, so that's going to stop it from snowballing. How? Did you not coach your team last year? Because it snowballed last year. Did you not coach your team last year? If you didn't, then something is going to be different. Now, isn't it? His condescension toward that reporter is just an example of how he treats people. And I'm going to tell you something else. And it's going to go maybe a little bit further than some people would like. I still have not forgotten Brian Kelly's insistence on practicing outdoors in an extraordinarily high wind weather day in South Bend. And insisting on having the student intern get up in the, what do you call that, Jim? It's not a cherry picker. It's like the scissors lift, you know, that.
Most teams refer to it as their little tower or something like that. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It raises up. It looks like scissors, you know.
Yeah.
The scissor lift. We've all seen them. And insisted that this practice be recorded in high winds. And for those who don't recall the terrible situation of a few years ago, a student died. It was extraordinarily ill-advised to go out there. Now, is he responsible for a student? No, I'm not saying he's responsible for the death of the student. But I've never forgotten it. I just cannot imagine insisting in those high winds, get up there, where the winds are higher, obviously, the higher you go, the stronger they are. Get up there and record my daggone practice. I've never gotten over that. I've just had my fill of him. And I'm not a diehard Notre Dame fan. So maybe my feelings don't matter worth a hill of you know what. But for me, I don't want him to represent my university. I don't want him representing my – and quite frankly, he's not worth it either, considering the fact that he isn't winning. He's not winning in anywhere near anywhere nearly as consistently as he should be. All right, and not to mention, you know what, Kush, because I talked about this too right before the NFL draft. What did he say about DeShone Kizer, Central Catholic product DeShone Kizer? He ripped him on his way out the door. And said, I don't think he's got the maturity. He should have stayed in school another year. He's not mature enough to go play in the NFL. You know, talk about, you know, hurting a guy's draft stock potentially. Talk about, you know, messages to other potential recruits, you know, hey, if you leave too soon, Brian Kelly's going to rip you on the way out the door. The whole thing just stinks that he's a part of. And I don't want Notre Dame, even though it's not my first choice of teams to root for, I do, you know, support them to a degree. Maybe it's just the Catholic in me, but I don't like the way he represents them. All right, college football, more talk on Notre Dame coming up. Let's intersperse it in with NFL football. Week number two, can the Lions go 2-0 on the young season? I will tell you this. When I put my team together this week for FanDuel, fantasy football, you know who's going to be on it, Kush, and it's going to be a great price, too, considering the fact that he's a rookie. Kenny Golladay is on my roster because Kenny Golladay had himself a day in his debut with Matthew Stafford, a third-rounder, and I don't know where you took him in your own fantasy league, but here's the thing. If you didn't take him, you can't get him now in regular fantasy football because he's already been drafted by one of your owner opponents. At FanDuel Fantasy Football, you can get him any week you want him. And if you don't want them, you don't have to take them. You get to change your roster each and every week. That's the beauty of FanDuel, of fantasy football, the FanDuel way. You can reshuffle your roster each and every week, and that's the beauty of it. And you know what else is very cool about it? You can play any type of contest you want. Play against another beginner if you're just starting out. Play in a $1 contest or play in a higher stakes contest against more experienced players if that's what you are. The beauty of FanDuel is you can choose your type of contest, you can choose your own roster, and then you just watch your team score in real time. It's a tremendous way to add so much fun to the football season. Join us. Over 2.5 million players have won cash money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. You can be one of them. Sign up now at FanDuel.com and click the Join Now button. Use my code France, FRANTZ. You might want to write that down. I have actually gotten emails from people saying, I tried to get the free entry into the NFL Sunday Million contest with over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit, and he said he was rejected. People emailed me and said they were rejected. Why? They spelled France wrong. FRANTZ. You got to spell it right at FanDuel.com. Sign up with the promo code France, FRANTZ. Void where prohibited. All right. We're going to go from college football to pro football, back to college football, Notre Dame style. Brendan Riley, 18stripes.com, joins us next. You can, too, at 866-240-1065, right here on the Extravaganza.
Back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. We do continue. Thanks so much for being with us right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, where are you watching your football these days? Because you know where you need to be watching it? At P-Dubs. It's where everybody watches football. Because Buffalo Wild Wings has made it, I mean, they've gone above and beyond. They've made B-Dubs basically into your own personal football man cave. They still have countless taps and HD screens, as always. But now the place is entirely committed to creating the perfect atmosphere for watching football. Food and drinks included, including the classic menu item called up now to the roster, the 35th Weck sandwich is to die for, and they're featuring a limited-time-only Blue Moon barbecue sauce that you have got to taste to really believe. There's more, but you got to come in to find out what it is. To the place with the best football experience going, bar none. It's Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Please, as always, drink responsibly. Joining us now to talk a little bit about Notre Dame and head coach Brian Kelly and Kush. Do me a favor and get Paul Feinbaum ready to go for our good friend Brendan Riley here so that he can hear exactly what some people on the national level are saying about the Notre Dame football Fighting Irish. Brendan Riley from 18stripes.com back with us again. Hey, Brendan, how are you, man?
Hey, okay, Bob. How you doing?
I'm good. I appreciate you joining us, spending a little time talking a little bit about the Irish and about 18stripes.com. And, your coach... Brian Kelly is not generating the very best publicity these days. I'm going to play the clip for those who have not heard it, and obviously so that you can be refreshed on it, of his interaction with a reporter who asked a very legitimate, valid question after the loss to Georgia, and then get your reaction. Also, Paul Feinbaum's reaction to it. But for those who have not yet heard it, here you go. This is what happened with Brian Kelly and
made
the report.
A ton of changes, changed the culture, everything. But obviously, you lost at the very end, kind of like last year, 7 of 8 losses.
What's the question?
I'm getting to it.
Get to the question.
How do you keep this from snowballing?
It's
like
not going to snowball. Next question.
Well, what exactly will be different, I guess?
There's nothing different. I go to work every day, and I coach my football team.
Okay.
Is that good enough for you?
Yes, I was just asking about the... how it was different from last year's losing by one possession.
Okay.
And tonight was also like that, so I was just wondering.
Losing by one possession?
Yes.
No, it was 1 point.
Okay.
Okay.
Exactly how many points, by the way, does it, or how many possessions does it take to score 1 point?
I'm
one possession. And her question was extraordinarily valid and on point, and he just condescended to her, Brendan, like you can't imagine. Let me get you Paul Feinbaum real quick on this, and then we'll get your take on it. Paul Feinbaum on ESPN Radio. Go ahead.
He is the same person. He just said a bunch of stuff to shut everyone up, and that's 2 games into the season. He's already right back to where he was, and that's why I don't think he has any path. I mean, Notre Dame can do a lot better than Brian Kelly. We shouldn't be sitting here on a program with this of this magnitude arguing or debating or discussing whether Brian Kelly treated a reporter poorly. That should not be the point, but it is, and I think it's going to continue to be, because I don't think he can get out of his own shadow. He's not going to be fired for losing 1 game, but if it's a close call, to me, the people at Notre Dame are going to look at incidents like that. That is the university on display, and it's a very bad look for a school that I still believe stands for the best in everything.
I second every word you just heard there, particularly in the last 20 seconds or so of Paul Feinbaum. So Brendan Riley of 18stripes.com. Where do you come down on Brian Kelly's representation of the University of Notre Dame?
I think in general it's okay. I think he seems to, especially in the post-game press conferences, stick his foot in his mouth quite a bit, you know. And here in this particular instance, I think there may have been a little something more to the interaction between him and that reporter, because that, and I'm not blaming her in any way. I mean, she's doing her job. But earlier in the week,
do you know her by chance, Brendan? Any chance? Do you know her?
Sorry, Lakin Littman from the Indianapolis Star. I don't know her personally, but I know that's who the reporter was.
Did you know her personally and have any interaction with her?
No.
Because I haven't heard from her since this situation. But please continue.
Right. Yeah. Sure. So I mean, I do know people who have had her on podcasts and stuff like that, and they say, you know, she's a professional.
Okay.
You know, and I think I've read her articles, and I think she writes good stuff. She wrote the article that came out 2 weeks ago, I think, or maybe earlier last week, about the player that's suing the university for neglect that led to injury. I don't know if you heard that story. Doug Randolph, former linebacker. Yeah, he's suing. It looks like a pretty typical lawsuit, but the university and the training staff and Brian Kelly himself and everybody saying that they sent him back in when they shouldn't have, and he ended up with nerve damage that, you know, he'll deal with forever and all this stuff.
Okay. No, so she wrote an article about that he disagreed with or disapproved of? Is that what your point is?
She did. I think most of what's in there is factual stuff plus the player's opinion, which is fine. It's presented as the player's opinion, which is fine. What I heard was that there was no heads up to the university that, hey, we're going to run this story, just so you know. You're going to be getting questions on it. And I think that rubbed him a little the wrong way, which I'm not in any way excusing what he did. I'm just saying that I think there's a little more to what happened there in that conference than just the post-game and the question itself. But certainly what I've seen with him in post-game conferences is he tends to run hot, right? Where in the Sunday press conference and the midweek practice reviews, whatever, he's more measured, he's more prepared, but he seems to have a habit, especially after losses, of, you know, he's someone once described Jim Coletto, the former Purdue coach and Notre Dame offensive coordinator, as a guy who doesn't have any speed bumps between his brain and his mouth. And I think that applies for Kelly in post-game discussions, too. I think he just doesn't have any speed bumps. It just comes out, and, you know, he gets irritable for sure. He gets cranky. He said himself on Sunday, he said, I should have handled that better, which, you know, it's good that he said that. It's 24 hours too late, you know.
But if I may, Brendan, what I heard there wasn't just, you know, not having a filter or to use your metaphor, speed bumps.
Right.
I see a demeanor. I see a condescension. Right. I see I am here behind this podium because I'm Brian freaking Kelly. You're sitting down there where you are because you're not. And that's the type of attitude that I think he gives off after each game, particularly after each loss. You know, a lot of guys run hot, but their demeanor is appropriate for the moment because they recognize they're not just representing themselves at that moment, but that backdrop with the ND all over it indicates they are representing the university. And he is, as Paul Feinbaum said, I think he is taking university that is supposed to be the model, and you know, and you can argue because it's Catholic and touchdown Jesus and the historical nature of Notre Dame football or whatever it is, it's there, and he is not living up to it, and it just makes the whole university, from the chancellor to the trustees to the athletic director to the players, it makes everybody look bad. And I think it's not just a filter or a speed bump thing. It's just a general meanness, a general, like I said, a condescension toward other people who are.
Yeah, he certainly exhibits very little patience at times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe some of the attitude of, I've forgotten more football than you know, you know.
Right.
I could see that, definitely. I think that's a fair characterization. You know, I think it's one of those things, it's not something I would defend, certainly. I wish he had a better demeanor, I don't want to say gentler because, you know, his job is to be tough at times, but a better demeanor in front of the press. I think if he wasn't losing so much.
Which is the next thing we'll talk about, yeah.
People wouldn't care as much, you know. You know, there are plenty of cranky guys who win, and people don't really talk about how cranky they are. It's funny how winning, you know, does that, papers over things. But certainly he doesn't give himself any leeway to have any questionable people skills with the on-field product.
Completely agree. Brendan Riley is our guest, 18stripes.com. It's a Notre Dame website promoting all of Notre Dame athletics and covering them as well. To the point about winning, and to Paul Feinbaum's point too, he said, look, he's not going to get fired for a loss. You know, although you add it to all of the other losses last year, and, you know, there's going to be a time when they have to make a decision, is the reputation hit that we sometimes take because of his demeanor and his narcissism and his condescension of others and his treatment of people, is it worth the result that we're getting? Are we getting the W's to make it worthwhile, or is the you know, the risk higher than the reward here, that we don't know what he's going to say next or how he's going to act next. And that risk isn't worth the reward we're getting, which is, you know, quite frankly, you know, we're not a top 10 program. We're not a top 25 program given at the moment. And maybe it's time we look for somebody who wins more and acts with more decorum.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. We were just having this discussion in our writers group the other day for 18 Stripes. And I said, you know, in all the previous discussions about, well, who else could we hire? You know, and people, one of the people mentioned is Kirk Ferentz from Iowa. And I say, Kirk Ferentz, what is he? You know, he's the picture of mediocrity and he has a good year every once in a while. And I said to one of the guys this morning, I said, you know what? I'm starting to think that maybe Brian Kelly is Kirk Ferentz. He's our Ferentz, you know, I'm poo-pooing that idea, but here's our guy. He's doing the same thing. He's muddling along at 8-5, you know, every year. And then there's a burst every once in a while and a collapse every once in a while. And, you know, he's in a funny area because there's a group of coaches at Notre Dame that are definitively good coaches, no question, and a group that are definitively bad. And until Brian Kelly, that's the only two groups there were. You know, you could very clearly put a guy in one bucket or the other bucket, and he's right between the two buckets. So he's not quite, you know, his win percentage isn't low enough to be with the bad coaches. It's not high enough to be with the good coaches. And I think that's part of the problem. It's, you know, you always think about replacement level with a coach, right, when you're talking about replacing him. And, you know, one of the things that I think has kept him there for a while is that his floor is higher. You know, but I think on the other hand, I'm a little concerned that we've already seen his ceiling.
Yeah.
And the ceiling isn't that high. And if the administration gets the sense that the ceiling isn't that high, then I don't think he's going to be long for the job.
You know, it's can you confirm for me or disagree and deny the part about this not being the most attractive job in the world? A previous caller brought this up and said, you know, if they fire him, who are they going to hire? You know, who's out there?
No.
And
I agree
I
with
said,
that.
Yep. Well, hold on real quick. The guy said that you would think that this would be like the premier job that everybody would want to have. And, you know, your first blush response would be, heck yeah, if I can be the head coach of Notre Dame. But what I said was, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong on this, is that some coaches are afraid of a job like this because, first of all, the pressure that goes, you know, with being the head coach of Notre Dame. But then second of all, it's not the easiest place to stock with, you know, 4- and 5-star recruits because of the academic standards and the admission standards.
Right.
And that's a challenge that you have at a Notre Dame, at a Stanford, at a Duke basketball. Those kinds of things are really, really tough. So do you think that there are coaches that might not really want the job because of the, you know, all of the difficult things that come along with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, to the previous caller's point, for example, like, you know, people would be falling over themselves to take this job. I think that was probably true 30 or 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's true now at all. I think there are any number of jobs that are more attractive, actually. You know, there's a certain amount of prestige, of course, with being at a blue blood program and succeeding at a blue blood program. And, you know, we have this great history of Duke Bachman and Frank Leahy and Lou Holtz and, you know, Ira Parseghian. And, you know, for a guy to put a plaque or a statue up next to those guys on campus, that means something for his legacy, and that's a big deal. But there's a lot of other stuff to deal with at Notre Dame, from an administration that at times has been kind of embarrassed by football success. And I don't think that's the case now, but it has been at times. You know, and they'll kind of step in and try to do more than they should. You have kids who have to, you know, go to class and study, and if they don't, then you miss them for the semester. You have all kinds of other stuff pulling these kids in different directions. Like you say, it's tougher to recruit. And I think now when you look at an era when everybody has cable, every team is on TV every weekend, you know, it doesn't have this, Notre Dame football doesn't have the same kind of natural position in the landscape that it used to. Right? And there's still a lot of prestige attached to the name, but there's a lot of stuff that you used to only be able to get if you coached at Notre Dame and you played at Notre Dame. And that's not the case anymore. So, you know, I can take $4 million from Notre Dame and deal with all this other stuff, or I can take $4 million from Oklahoma or Alabama or Ohio State and not deal with all this other stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great point. And you still have the prestige because you're still at a, you know, at a name university, a football tradition, powerhouse, et cetera, and you not have to deal with all of that. So can I ask you, just based on, you know, what you hear, how, you know, you talk about it in the writer's room, but you don't talk about it at the Board of Trustees meetings. You don't talk about it with Father Jenkins. What is the leadership saying? Do you have an idea of what the administration thinks about all this?
I don't have an idea. I get, you know, I spend far too much of my life reading stuff about the team. So, you know, the most I can do is read tea leaves.
Right.
I think, you know, we talk about how many wins saved his job, but I think for sure he's safe with 8 this year. I think personally for sure he's out with 6 wins. 7 is kind of a gray area, but then, you know, we talk about going forward. I have no idea. I think as far as being cranky in press conferences, unless he does something really, really bad, you know, like he goes off on a tirade against someone or starts calling names or stuff like that, I don't think that in itself would be enough to push him out.
Okay.
But I do think he has a dwindling number of friends on campus. That's just a sense that I get.
And it would certainly stand to reason why. I mean, you can see it. The question is Jack Swarbrick still his friend? You know, are the members of the board still his friends?
And I do,
Brendan, because I'm out of time, my friend.
Sure.
I appreciate your weighing in on this. Obviously, it's a tough thing to talk about when you're talking about your favorite school and your favorite team, but I always appreciate your work. Keep up the great work at 18stripes.com, okay?
All right. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Thanks very much. That is all the time that we have. Music isn't playing. That means I got to stop talking. And you know who has to start talking? Mike Miller does, because Drive Time is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.